Calling all conscious achievers who are seeking more community and connection, I've got an invitation for you. Join me at this year's Summit of Greatness, this September 7th through 9th in my hometown of Columbus, Ohio, to unleash your true greatness. This is the one time a year that I gather the greatness community together in person for a powerful, transformative weekend. People come from all over the world, and you can expect to hear from inspiring speakers like Inky Johnson, Jaspreet Singh, Vanessa Van Edwards, Jen Sincero, and many more. You'll also be able to dance your heart out to live music, get your body moving with group workouts, and connect with others at our evening socials. So if you're ready to learn, heal, and grow alongside other incredible individuals in the greatness community, then you can learn more at lewishouse.com/summit2023. Make sure to grab your ticket, invite your friends, and I'll see you there.
You should be satisfied. You should wake up feeling satisfied with your life. Mm. It doesn't mean that you don't want the next thing. Of course you want the next thing. If life were to end today, would you want to have lived an unsatisfied life?
Welcome to the School of Greatness. My name is Lewis Howes, former pro athlete turned lifestyle entrepreneur. And each week we bring you an inspiring person or message to help you discover how to unlock your inner greatness. Thanks for spending some time with me today. Now let the class begin.
Remember the Thai cave rescue? What about the mission depicted in Black Hawk Down or the epic rescue shown in Captain Phillips? You've probably heard of all of these, but did you know that the U.S. Air Force Special Warfare played a pivotal role in all of them? These airmen are the most highly trained warriors on the planet. Other forces like the SEALs and Army Rangers call on them to provide skills no one else can. Not many people make the cut. If you think you can, visit airforce.com to learn more.
Apple Card is the perfect cash back rewards card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch, subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
I don't know about you, but when around 3 p.m. hits, I find myself craving the right refreshment to get me through that mid-afternoon slump. New Pure Leaf Zero Sugar Sweet Iced Tea is full-flavored sweet tea, but without the sugar and the calories. It might take several bottles for you to believe that a delicious sweet tea can really have zero sugar and zero calories. But you know what they say, life is full of surprises. Or in this case, full of flavor. New Pure Leaf Zero Sugar Sweet Iced Tea. Try it to believe it. For 20% off your next 12-pack, head to Amazon and use promo code 20PureLeaf. That's promo code 20PureLeaf for 20% off.
Welcome to this special masterclass. We've brought some of the top experts in the world to help you unlock the power of your life through this specific theme today. It's going to be powerful, so let's go ahead and dive in.
What are your thoughts on the idea of never be satisfied?
You know what? I understand why somebody would say that. You know, like, you should always be hungry. Like, you should always be chasing. That's a good motivator, you know, to get the next thing so that you wake up and you want to go get it. But that's a terrible way to live. It's a complete... I vehemently disagree with the concept that you should never be satisfied. You know, it's like, you should be satisfied. You should be satisfied. You should wake up feeling satisfied with your life. Mm. It doesn't mean that you don't want the next thing. Of course you want the next thing. But like, if life were to end today, would you want to have lived an unsatisfied life?
No.
Would you want, like I think, I really do think of Peter at those last days. You know, and think about all the things that he was unsatisfied about. I don't want that for myself. I don't want that for you.
Yeah.
I don't think any of us should live that way. So be satisfied. You know, and that doesn't mean lesser than.
Be satisfied, you know? Even if you're just starting out as an assistant getting coffee, if you're the CEO, if you're anywhere in between, if you're in an off season.
Yes.
Be satisfied.
Be satisfied. Be satisfied with like how wonderful you have it. You know, even the least of us, even the people who are like, you know, in this terrible place, like I said, like, we can be satisfied. Like, the day after Peter died, it was a few days later because we were having his funeral. He died on December 11, 2013. It was 4 days before his 44th birthday. Mm. And so on his 44th birthday, December 15th, we had his funeral.
Wow.
And made it a party.
Wow.
And I was sitting there and, you know, kind of in a haze, but then also, you know, that moment of clarity where I'm looking around the room and like his fraternity brothers are drinking beers and they're sharing stories about him. And, you know, my daughter's like sleeping on my mom's lap and I've got my sisters like in the corner trying to busy themselves, you know, like getting out plates of food and whatnot. And you see people connecting. And it was the oddest thought. You know, I looked around and I was just like, wow, like, This is a good group of people.
Mm.
You know, this is a great place to be.
No.
To have this. And so I was satisfied in that moment. The most terrible thing had happened in my life. But I was looking around and feeling very satisfied with who I had around me. And that, I think, is what I would like for all of us to consider.
Yeah.
That even when things are bad and going wrong, you can still be satisfied. You can still feel like, ah, this is it, and it is okay.
Mm.
Yeah, it's okay.
I'm a big fan of the title of the book, The Urgent Life. And when I saw this, I was just thinking to myself, yes, right away, because we have like similar, completely different experiences, but similar feelings probably from experiences we've had.
Mm.
So. Mm-hmm. My father got in an accident. He had a traumatic brain injury and was in a coma for 3 months when I was 21.
Wow.
And I remember we didn't know if he was going to live or die, but he eventually woke up after 3 months.
Mm.
And he was a completely different person. Wow. Like, he was physically alive, but emotionally and mentally kind of gone.
Oh.
It took him a while to like learn how to talk again. Mm-hmm. He wasn't able to work anymore. He had amnesia. So when I'd see him, he'd be like, "Who? What's your name again?"
Mm.
It was just a different type of relationship, right? I had to learn to love my father for who he was and start to grieve the man that he once was before, right?
God.
And I remember thinking he was in his early 50s when this happened.
Mm.
He had worked so hard for 30 years as a life insurance salesman, where he finally was starting to make money, where he could like travel and have some freedom in his life.
Mm.
And he was starting to feel like he was happy for the first time, fully happy.
Yeah.
And then this accident happened.
Mm.
And I remember being really angry at life that my dad didn't get to go live the rest of his life the way he wanted to. And I felt like I had so much urgency to go pursue everything I wanted.
Mm.
Like, from that moment on.
Yeah.
I was like, I'm not going to let any fear or insecurity hold me back.
Mm-hmm.
It might still be there, but I'm at least going to take the actions on my goals, my dreams, and live urgently. Because what if this happens to me? What if I get in a car accident tomorrow?
Yeah.
And something like that happens to me, I'd be sad that I didn't at least go try.
Mm.
And this, you know, again, completely different experience you had, but it created a feeling of urgency in your life with your ex-husband, right?
Yeah,
with your husband.
Yeah.
And which was almost 10 years ago.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah. 10 years and, this December.
And can you explain the story about what had happened with your husband around wanting to get divorced and then
the
cancer situation? And how this, how being in a very dark, sad, challenging time, sad time, wanted you to create urgency at the same time and live into your best self during sadness. Can you explain a little bit about that?
Ugh. Well, first of all, I really appreciate what you just said and shared about your dad, you know, because I feel that for all of us who are living this life on this like hurtling rock that we call home, we don't always have to have had the same experience to understand essentially the concept of what I'm talking about.
Right.
You know, this need for urgency. And it's not necessarily about the rush through life. It's about the intention.
Mm-hmm.
You know, knowing, like you said, like, you know, I want to do these things because what if? So then you're intentional about saying, okay, I want to live a big life, or I want to go do this thing that I'm dreaming of, or I want to push a little harder because, like, what if, right? And the same thing for me in that, like, I don't think of the end of life in this morbid way where I'm just like, oh, today might be my last day. I don't think of it in a morbid way. It's very inspiring to me, actually. It makes me want to get up and go do the thing, you know? And again, it's not about a rush. It's like, I want to make the best use of my time that I have. I don't know how long it is, but I want to make the best use of it. And I'm also conscious of the fact that I won't do everything.
Mm-hmm.
And so that means that I have to be very intentional about the things I choose to do. You know?
Yes.
Because if you walk around thinking like, oh, I have the time, I'll just do everything at some point, then maybe you don't get to do anything at all. So I'm intentional in knowing that like, oh, okay, I might not get a chance to complete everything. So what's the most important thing?
Right.
And then I want to do those things.
Right.
And so at the time in December of 2013, when Peter passed away, we were there. You know, where, you know, the stories are true. You're sitting at the deathbed and you're talking about all the things you wish you'd done.
Mm. Is that what he was saying?
Oh, yeah. We talked about so much.
Oh, man.
The things he wanted to do, his hopes and dreams, what he wants for Layel, our daughter, like what he wanted for her in the future. You know, all of those things. And I was sitting there listening and thinking and crying and making promises and all of the things. And knowing that I need to change the way I live.
Mm.
You know, he wouldn't have a chance to do it over. So I need to do it. You know? And it was such a dark time also because we were already going through so much on top of being at death's door. You know, that like our marriage had fallen apart. We had been separated for a couple of years already through so much. Gosh, additional traumas that happened to us, misunderstandings, anger, you know, that we couldn't overcome with just love.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you
unmet think that expectations, like, everything, yeah.
Oh man, you think love conquers everything. And
love
no, it
is not
does
enough.
Not.
Love is not enough.
Love is not enough. You know, love is not enough. And it was all of that turmoil that led us to that moment where I am sitting holding his hand.
Mm.
At his breath gets shallower and shallower, you know, and thinking about all the things I would have done differently if I had a shot to do it again. You know, it's not necessarily that like, oh, I wish life had turned out differently. It's just that I wish I had been motivated differently.
Mm. What were you motivated by before then?
Oh, man. I think at that time I was motivated by just my own need for my own life,
mm-hmm.
you know, not really focus on anybody else's.
Mm.
And that sounds very selfish, but that's where I was.
Right.
You know, it was not, I was a mother and a wife, but I was still only focused on myself.
Really?
Yeah.
At that time?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, it's like, you know, there was so much that had happened on my path to motherhood. And it's another one of the things that, like, you know, now I talk about so openly because we also paint motherhood like it's supposed to be like this great, amazing thing that, like, oh, you get pregnant and then all of a sudden it's like, oh, all this love shows up from nowhere and you're just like encapsulated by this person. It's like, no, that actually doesn't happen all of the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
moments of that might happen.
Moments of that might happen, but
it's majority of time is probably like cleaning diapers and feeding and pumping and all the things that moms have to do.
And sitting there and being like, oh, hell, I made a mistake.
Right.
This is not what I wanted in my life, you know, and struggling with that. And there were so many times where I thought about that. You know, it was like, wow, like, you know, is this life what I actually wanted? And so then at that moment in December of 2013, I was like, oh, no, I have to make the life that I want. I have to make it. I have to be an active participant.
What was the biggest lesson during that time you feel like you learned about his regrets, or about him not doing the things that he wanted to do?
Yeah.
What opened up for you during that time that shifted, if anything did shift for you in that?
This might sound funny, but I think logic is what surprised me most.
Uh-huh.
The logic of things. Yeah. The writing down. It's like almost like the writing down of the plan.
Mm.
You know, things that make sense. Because you're like, oh, I'm going to do these things. I'm logically going to take these steps in order to get to that thing, right? And all of his regrets, everything that he wanted to do that he didn't get a chance to do was based on the logic of the steps to get to that thing that he never got to.
Like just scheduling it in the calendar or like
making
the
to-do list. And then, and then it's like, oh, I'm going to do this and I'm going to do that. And then all based on logic. Life is not made of logic. Life is magic. It's the accidental encounters. Mm-hmm. It's the things that you can't explain. The feeling that you get in your belly that makes you feel alive and glittery. Or it makes you super sad and you don't want to get out of bed and the sky just looks gray. And then maybe one thing happens, you're like, oh, okay, I can do it. You know, that's life. And being open to that is actually what gives you the experiences. So therefore, when perhaps you don't accomplish everything that was on your plan, you still feel really happy about the things that you did do. Because it was also magical. You know, and I'm not talking about like these big firework things. I'm talking about the little stuff too. You know, the new person that you meet on the way to somewhere. You know, or like the like meal that you had that you didn't think was going to be delicious that you just really savored.
Yeah.
It was like, it was just magically amazing, you know, and just being appreciative of those moments. So again, it's like the life is not just about like the big, big, big stuff. It's not the headlines, you know. So to me, it's like logic is what I then threw out the window.
Interesting.
I was like, oh, I'm not going to live a logical life. I'm going to live a magical life, the kind that is open to all of the things I can't explain.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that like the writing down of the list and the making the steps. You know, and I'm not saying that you walk around just like, huh, na-di-da-di-da, whatever happens today is what happens. You know, like, look, we all got to be responsible adults, okay? But the truth of the matter is that like, how many of our plans have been stopped because of logic? The things that you said like, ah, well, shoot, I can't do that because of this reason, that reason, and that reason. And sometimes it's other people's logic that actually stops you from doing things you want to do. And so I want to stop that. I've been active in being like, every time I approach a new ambition or a new idea or like, oh, I want to take a trip here, and that logic starts to come in, I'm like, girl, where's that magic? You better just step out and let the magic find you.
Ooh, yeah.
You know? And not stop yourself because the math is mathing.
Right. It doesn't make sense logically.
It doesn't make sense logically.
Allow wonder and synchronicity to enter your life.
To happen. Mm-hmm. Louis, I can't tell you how many things have happened in my life that don't make sense.
Right.
The fact that I've had the career I've had doesn't make sense. It's not logical. There's no stat. Even when you look at things like, oh, you know, how many black women CMOs have had jobs at, you know, for like Fortune 50 companies. Mm-hmm. There's no math. There's no data point because it doesn't exist.
Yeah.
But I exist. So can you explain that? Mm. No, you cannot. So opening yourself up to like these things is what actually creates your destiny to like run the way that it should. Mm. You know? I'll give you one example. Yeah. When Peter died in December of 2013, I was at PepsiCo. Mm-hmm. I'd been there for 10 years.
Wow.
It was a great job. You know, I'd done many iterations of things. And at that time, I was the head of music and entertainment marketing. And so I had been part of the team that did deal with the NFL for the Super Bowl halftime show. I put Beyonce on that stage. Like, it was like, you know, it was huge. Having a great, exciting career. And then Peter died. And I looked around and I was like, man, like, you know, I think I want to do more things. You know, am I going to sit here for another 10 years in New York City? Like, doing this, or have I had enough of this? And as I formulated that thought, I went to, I think it was NBA All-Star or something like that. And I met somebody that I knew very, you know, lightly, who told me that Jimmy Iovine and Dr. Dre had started their company Beats Music off of the back of Beats by Dre, and that they were looking for a head of marketing. Would I be interested? And the job was in LA. Mm. My husband had been dead maybe 2 months.
Mm.
I had a 4-year-old child that I was trying to figure out how to raise by myself.
Right.
You know, like all these things. And so logic would tell you that, no, sit your down.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, situate your life. Figure out how to be a widow and a single mom and the main breadwinner. Like, figure that stuff out. Calm down. Get some therapy. You know, just like sit and be quiet for a second. Grieve. Let a year go by and then figure out what you want to do. But instead, I was like, it really doesn't make any sense for me to leave Pepsi, a long established company, and go to Beats Music, where it's barely a company.
Some new thing, yeah.
I didn't even know what music streaming was. I had no idea what the hell that was. I had no idea. But I came to LA and took a meeting with Jimmy, and he was talking about stuff that I had no idea about. And when I resigned from PepsiCo to take the job, everybody told me it was a bad idea. Mm. Who was going to tell you there was not one person who supported it? Wow. Not even my mother.
Wow.
No one. Everybody thought I'd lost my mind. People thought I was acting out of grief. Maybe I was. You know, but the magic was that that opportunity opened up the next 10 years of my life.
Yeah.
It was the magic, the spark that I needed.
Where do you see yourself growing to the next level?
I think that when I started this journey in my life of trying to make wisdom go viral and to share ideas and help people train their mind for peace and purpose every day, there was a certain speed and pace that allowed me to figure out what I needed to do every 12 months. And now I feel like I'm moving away from thinking about the next 12 months to thinking about the next 12 years and thinking about the next 20 years and thinking about the next 30 years. And so I feel like I'm at an evolution and growth in my own life where a change of pace will be what I'm looking for, because I found that up until now, I felt like I had to do lots of little things all the time to be able to establish what I'm doing today. And now I realize it's actually going to take fewer, bigger things that you can only get to if you've done the step before. Right. But now I realize that that's what it's going to take. And so...
And what about the, you know, you've been studying this for the last few years and teaching deeper insights on love, practicing it, writing about it, speaking about it on stage, in podcasts, things like that. Where do you see yourself growing in love with friends, family, your marriage, and with yourself moving forward after this work?
Yeah. So what I found was, as I was doing this work, I realized that often the blocks to love are not because you don't have the deep intention to love people, but it's that you are putting yourself under so much stress and pressure that you're too agitated and irritated to be present and actually share love. Mm-hmm. So I saw this study that talked about how you think you don't wake up early the next morning, even though you wanted to, because you're bad at waking up early. But the truth is, it's because you're actually experiencing stress. And when you're experiencing stress, you can't implement a new habit. And so reducing stress allows you to be the person you want to be. If you think about when you say something you don't want to say, it's because you're irritated.
Reactive.
When you do something you don't want to do, it's because you're stressed.
One of my favorite parts about my job is that I get the opportunity to travel a lot. And in fact, I'm recording this right now while I'm in Mexico. And actually, I was thinking about something that I wanted to share because I get a lot of questions from so many people about different side hustle ideas. So here's one for those of you out there that are on the go a lot like I am or traveling a lot. When you're staying in your Airbnb on your trips, have you ever thought about how you could be making extra money by hosting through Airbnb while your home is vacant? If you're interested in an extra stream of income, Airbnb hosting is an easy place to start, and it's like giving your home some company while you're away. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. So listen, we all know life is full of yada yada, like those quote unquote free trials that somehow still charge your card for something, or when companies have those sneaky gotchas hiding deep in the fine print. And I know you've dealt with yada yada before, like those bills that keep going up and up for no reason at all, or when budget airlines promise a cheap fare but then charge you for every little thing until you realize you're paying more than you would have somewhere else. And yes, it is possible to outsmart yada yada, like triple checking airline deals to make sure all you need is already included, but you don't take yada yada in life, so don't take yada yada from your wireless provider. Metro by T-Mobile has no contracts, no credit checks, no surprises, and nada yada yada. Stop by one of over 6,000 Metro stores nationwide.
When you get a new car or a new home, your first reaction might be to say things like, oh yeah, or I can't believe it, or booyah. But what you really want to say is the one thing that can get you the help you need. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. State Farm is there with the coverage you need for your car, your home, and even boats, motorcycles, RVs, and other things that matter to you. With a State Farm agent, you know someone is there to help you choose the coverage you need. With so many coverage options, it feels good knowing you can find what fits for you. And when you need ways to get help, State Farm gives you options there too, in person or on the phone with your local agent, or on statefarm.com, where their award-winning app State Farm lets you do things your way. So when you need help protecting the things that matter most, remember to say, like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
When you react to someone in a way that you don't think is yourself, it's because you're agitated. So we act in unloving ways because we are putting ourselves under stress, irritation, agitation, or pressure. And so for me, what I've realized that if I want to be my best loving self and be present with each and every person and be conscious of that energy, I have to learn to not put myself under so much stress that I can't be present.
Right.
So that's been a big lesson of love, that you can't love while you're putting yourself under stress or pressure in any way.
And it goes back to your kind of theme about peace and purpose every day. I don't think you can fully give your authentic heart without being peace.
Yes.
Without being in a state of peace. And I understand life happens and stresses happen, but creating a baseline going back to peace so you can be present.
Yeah.
When we're not in peace, when we're stressed, you're in scarcity mode. You're in fight or flight. You're not present with your friends, your family, your loved ones, or just acquaintances. You're reactive.
Totally.
And people don't feel loved when you're not present.
Yes, exactly.
When you're not looking them in the eyes or just listening to them and being in a good state of being when you're around them.
Yeah. The other one that came to mind when you said that as you're speaking is Russell Barkley said that the people who need the most love ask for it in the most unloving ways.
Wow.
And
so true.
The commitment I've made to myself is I no longer want to ask for love in unloving ways. I no longer want to be snappy to feel loved. I no longer want to be demanding to experience love. I no longer want to make someone else feel a passive-aggressive comment to feel love. I want to communicate about the type of love I need in an open and honest way rather than trying to hope that someone else is going to figure it out because I'm sending subliminal messages or I'm being distant or I'm avoiding them. And so that was something deeply that I learned was that we just constantly keep asking, even the people that love us the most, we keep requesting and demanding love in the most unloving ways.
Yes.
And if we can free ourselves of that, you can actually make a relationship really special and beautiful. Mm-hmm. And so we have to let go of that.
Yeah. People who've come on, who have done great things and done it over a short period of time or gotten notoriety or gotten, you know, well-known or different things or had a big exit when they didn't have money. Essentially 5 years ago, you weren't on the map. You didn't have a big audience. You didn't have a lot of money. You didn't have the New York Times bestsellers. You didn't have all these things. I'm curious, before all that started, on a scale of 1 to 10, the peace and self-love scale, let's call it, 10 being you had total peace and love for yourself and love for the people around you and you were present all the time, 1 being you hated yourself. Where were you before we met? And then where are you today after success?
Yeah, that's a great question. I'd have to say that I was probably at a 7 or 8 before, to be honest, because even though my work's been noticed publicly in the last 5 years or 6 years, there was a whole 10 to 11 years before that where I literally did this for whoever showed up.
Five people.
Literally. So like when I was 18, and of course, in my first book, I tell the story of how I met monks. I had a society at university called Think Out Loud. And what it was a community where I would put out flyers and posters myself, and whoever wanted to come from my university would attend. And it was called Think Out Loud. I would dissect a movie based on philosophy, psychology, and spirituality. So I would take a movie like Inception and I would break it down. I'd take a movie like Notebook and break it down. I'd take a movie like Good Will The Hunting. Butterfly Effect, yeah, yeah. Good Will Hunting. Like, yeah. I'd take these incredible movies and I would do these sessions. They'd be absolutely free. And I did it for the first year and 5 to 10 people came. Second year, maybe 25 people came. Third year, there were sometimes where 100 people were in the room. And I was just doing it because I loved it. Then I became a monk. When I came back, I did the same thing in the corporate world. I had an event in London called Conscious Living. Uh-huh. It was on a Friday night. Literally 5 to 10 people would show up once a month, but it would make me so happy to spend hours with them afterwards. I would literally do a session. I'd serve everyone food because we'd always sit down to break bread. And then we'd sit down for 2-3 hours and I would just answer people's questions and sit with them. And I didn't have any followers. I didn't have any platforms. I didn't have any audience, but I loved it. And so I was already living the dream, in my opinion, because I was getting to do what I love on top of having a day job. And to me, that felt realistic. Yeah. When I look at my happiness and joy now,
scale of 1 to 10 and like the, yeah.
I'd say, to be honest, there's days when it's a 9 and there's days when it's a 5.
Really?
Yeah. It oscillates and it's because...
Why is that?
Well, I think it's because I've taken on so much more now to think about, to be in charge of, to lead. You have other people that you're responsible for. You have teams of all of these people that rely on you to do what you do best and take care of them and connect. And they're trying to help you out and build with you. And so the responsibility scale level is so much higher now. And so it's not that I don't feel peaceful in my purpose, but it's that you do deal with daily stress, daily challenges, daily pressure in a way that I didn't before because it was just about me.
This is so fascinating because pretty much everyone I ask says something similar.
No way.
Where this, like, they were peaceful. They loved them. They had more confidence before. It's not saying you have more confidence, but on the scale of like inner peace and self-love and fulfillment, it was like almost less on every scale because of the weight, the pressure, the, man, just so much more going on and needing to navigate.
Yeah.
A lot more going on in life as opposed to more of a simple, peaceful life.
But one thing I've understood though with that point is that the reason why that translates is that discomfort is where you grow.
That's it.
And that's what I realized.
You can't stay comfortable.
You can't. And so I find that a lot of my life today, I often say to people, like, I think 75% of my working week is in my discomfort zone. Mm. And so I really crave comfort in my relationships. I crave comfort
peace
on my weekends.
At home, relax.
Exactly. Yeah, I have great relationships with you, of course. And we have a good group of friends and I have a good relationship with my wife. And like, so I rely on my personal relationships to have some comfort and some stability as I take on discomfort in my service and purpose. And so I think that makes sense. And so I think you also just get better at understanding what growth looks like and what you need. I think if I just sat and lived that life forever, I don't think it would have stabilized. I don't think I would have stayed at a 7 or an 8. Yeah. That would have probably come down as well,
true,
but for different reasons. Right. And so the reason that now it comes down are actually positive, healthy reasons or can be managed in a healthy way.
Yes. If you have something inside of you, an idea inside of you, a seed, and bringing it to life as into a business can be the same thing as bringing a child into life. It's an idea, a seed, a thought that you want to create. So it's a creation either way.
Yeah. Yes. And look, I'm all for biology. I think that's very powerful. But there are those moments, right? Those intuitions. Like when you have a baby, there's like the woman's intuition. Like we're giving so many things in order to be able to protect the baby. And yet with business, like I have learned to start to listen to my intuition just the same. Mm-hmm. It's like, I think intuition has to be trained. Right. I don't think it's just like, oh, you got intuition. It's fine. You're amazing. You know everything. It's like, no. We learn intuition as we get older. That look, that one time, that one person gave me a look, ended bad. Your body remembers.
Feel it, yeah, of course.
So
what would you say is the biggest insecurity or fear you still are faced with today?
Really starting anything new. I mean, that's never, you know, even writing this book, it's like, I don't know how to write a book. And even getting interviewed, right? It's like, I don't know how to be interviewed about a book. So it's not so much insecurity now in the sense of it. I don't feel petrified, but like, I know I'm not equipped.
Mm.
And so is that an insecurity? Sure, but it's a valid insecurity because I've never done a book before. So anytime I fear that, like what that fear of like, oh, you're about to enter a space that you don't know, I just reassure myself. It's like, oh, it's day one. It's day one. Give yourself the grace to know anything you try is day one. We do it at college, right? I bet you did it at practice. Like the first time you picked up a football, you weren't thinking that you were going to be the best quarterback in the world.
Right.
It's like, oh, I've got to learn how to freaking throw the ball.
Uh-huh.
So that's what I do. Just day one, anytime I feel the fear over anything new, Lewis, anything, I have these mantras, I have these tactics, I have these tools, everything I put in the book. It's like, okay, Lisa, you've got radical confidence. Radical confidence means that even with the fear, you're going to move forward, but you need to practice. You have to go in with a mindset that you're going to learn and have a game plan. And then when you fall on your face, get back up. Like, that is my superpower. I wish I could be amazing at things, but I'm not. So I remind myself my superpower is I'm the person that gets back up.
Yeah.
And that's encouraging.
That's beautiful. And what about around money? How has your mindset shifted? Do you feel like you have created more confidence or more self-love or more belief in yourself as the money started to come for both you and Tom in your life, where you really didn't have a lot beforehand? You had some, you're working or he was working, but it wasn't like the amount of wealth that you guys created with Quest and Impact Theory and everything you guys have built together. How did the accumulation of wealth change your beliefs about yourself?
Oh, that's such a big question. That's such a good question, Lewis. Okay.
You went from an apartment, I'm assuming, to a house, to a bigger house, to you know, number in your bank account going way up, to being able to buy things now, lots of great things.
Yeah.
How did that shift?
So I really thought, when we're successful, when we're rich, I'm going to feel like it. Everything's going to be okay. Because you look at successful, wealthy people, and you're like, you, at least for me, can't speak for other people, I admire them. Like, oh my God, look at that watch. Like, look at that thing, right? Like, oh my God. I'm going to feel great when I have it. So because you think that about that person, you think that that's how you're going to feel when you get there. So I'm going to take you back. Quest is announced as a billion-dollar company, but we all know until you actually make any sales,
you don't make any money.
You literally don't make any
money.
You're
just getting a salary and some bonuses. Yeah.
Tom and I were still sharing the same Ford Focus with a hole in the exhaust when Quest was announced as a billion-dollar company.
Uh-huh.
So everyone thinks you're wealthy, but we literally had, you know, Tom's salary and that was it. So we go to sell a very small portion of Quest. And so these things take months and months.
Right,
and months.
Right. How much did you guys, what was the percentage?
Is I think it was like 9% at the beginning.
That you guys had total?
That we sold. So there's three business partners, Tom and then the other.
So they split it three ways, essentially.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So we split like 9% or something, like 11%. I can't remember how much. This was a while ago. So it's a small percent. So you're still taking massive ownership over it, but it was still a hell of a lot of money.
Absolutely.
So now that sort of thing takes months and months and months. So we didn't want to talk about it. We didn't tell anybody that we were trying to sell a bit because you never know what's going to happen. So one day we hear rumors that today is going to be the day.
That the money comes in.
Yes.
Like there's a wire transfer of this much money.
Yes, our Ford Focus is still sitting in the drive.
Right.
And we hear these rumors from our finances that the money's about to come in. So we're working in our makeshift garage gym. And in between reps, Tom's like, all right, babe, refresh, refresh. No, nothing yet.
Oh,
so we're
like,
going deep in, refresh, refresh. And literally one button, refresh,
boom,
your life changes.
Wow.
And in that moment, I was like, oh my God. And so we hugged, we took a couple of selfies. And then what did we do, Lewis? We got back up and went back to work.
Yeah.
And in that moment, because first of all, I was like, babe, where are you going? Yeah, we're going to set up. He goes, we've got to get back to work. Our mission isn't done.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, you're right. And in that moment, it was such a beautiful realization. Because we had had a mission. So we were chasing money. We said, stop chasing money. Now let's chase something that's actually predicated on passion, desire, and value add. That was Quest Nutrition. So we flipped our mindsets. We stopped chasing money. Mm-hmm. And in the effort of stop chasing money, it led to us creating money. But because of we'd already developed a mission, we'd already developed our why, we knew why we were getting out of bed every day, that didn't change just because our bank account did. Now look, I'm not going to pretend. It was amazing, right? Ford, we didn't tell anybody, and about 2 days later or something, we went shopping.
Yeah.
And it was like,
get whatever you want,
So it was like, that's amazing. I'm never going to BS anyone. It was a dream come true. It was wonderful. But it didn't change how I felt about myself.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't change my mission.
Did you believe you were deserving and worthy of the money?
I don't really think like that. I don't really know what that means because when it says deserving, there are people out there that have a harder life than I do, that work harder to provide for their family than I do. So it's hard for me to say deserve. We work freaking hard for it. Mm-hmm. We sacrificed. So do I think that it was, you know, well-placed maybe? Sure. You know, it's hard for me to answer that. It really did become a, when you get what you think you want, when you go to bed at night, how do you feel about yourself? And it was the same. It was just in more expensive bed sheets.
Right.
You know, and
the nicer car. And,
yeah. The negative voice is still there. The person saying that you're not good, it's still there. The imposter syndrome is still there. It's just in a nicer house.
So you still felt like an imposter?
Oh my God, of course. Yeah.
What was the imposter voice?
I still felt
voice?
Like I was helping my husband out.
Mm. What year was this?
2015.
Okay, so about 7 years ago.
Yeah. So
what was the voice in your head at that time? When this massive number hits the bank account, what is that imposter voice saying to you?
Even though at this point I had, you know, I was had 40 employees underneath me, 10,000 square foot, literally went from shipping bars on my living room floor to that. Mm-hmm. And then imposter syndrome is that my husband and his business partners earned the money and I was a good help.
So that's what you were saying to yourself.
Gotcha. Yeah. And so even that like took work and, you know, internal work and, you know, like the value, what value do you bring to the table just because your name is on that piece of paper as like, you know, a founder, because those three were, it's like you've brought, you know, to really coach myself through, but you've sacrificed, you've given every hour of every day. Literally, I was working 12, 13 hours a day. So to really believe in myself that I had earned that was very hard, but it was important for me to do. And then the idea of in the grind, when things are hard and you're asking yourself, what the hell are we doing this all for? Like, why? Tom and I would drive around Beverly Hills in our crappy car and we would like point out all the houses we would buy. And we were like, I like this style. No, I like this style. And then eventually the money comes to our account and we actually can buy the house that we're like, the roads that we're touring. So it's like the biggest dream come true. And in that moment, it was like I wanted a waterfall. So I'm a 90s chick. I love hip hop and I love 90s. And so I was like always joking, but really serious. I was like, babe, I want to do like our own version of a 90s hip hop music video. I want a waterfall. I want Dom Perignon bottle. Like I want to pour it down me in a sexy outfit. I want you to film me. Like that was the dream. I have to emotionally tie to a dream. It can't just be like a house. It has to be like the feeling of getting the house. So I had this vision, we finally get the house, it finally has a freaking waterfall, dude. We get the keys, we got a bottle of Dom Perignon, Tom's got a photo, he's taking a photo of me, I'm taking a swig of the champagne. And that was the moment my health and my gut felt like it, you know, obviously I've had health issues. Mm-hmm. That was the moment.
Really?
That same moment that we were celebrating the biggest achievement of our lives.
Really?
It's so cliche.
Why was that the moment, do you think?
So I think I'd had 15 years of gut issues. I was ignoring them. I was priding myself on the grind. I wasn't priding myself on the self-care. So for years and years, I was getting sicker and sicker because I wasn't replenishing my gut. I had a very unhealthy relationship with food. Mm-hmm. So I wasn't having fat. I wasn't eating carbs. I thought I had to be as skinny as possible. So all this unhealthy relationship, I was getting sick because I was working a lot. I wasn't replenishing. And so I was getting a lot of antibiotics. Mm. And so for like years and years and years, I was taking 3 to 4 or 5 times a year antibiotics. Wow. And I really think it got to the point where I'd pushed myself into the ground and the bubbly and the alcohol, I think it was just that moment.
Wow.
And I think, and it literally from them, it felt like it erupted. I didn't tell Tom because of course I'm trying to be strong.
Sure.
So I'm like, babe, I'll be back in a second. I run to the bathroom and I literally cannot get, I'm like, what the hell is happening to me? My gut is in like such disarray, but my husband's so excited for, so of course, what do I tell myself? Just push through it.
Right.
Don't tell him, push through it. It's a celebration. And I was like, all right, if I just get straight into the swimming pool, then I'll be able to hide my pain.
Oh man.
So I get out, I'm like trying to pretend, I'm like rushing into the swimming pool and just the water pressure was too unbearable.
Ooh.
And that's when I'm like, babe, I don't know what's wrong. That was 6 years ago. Wow. 6 years ago. I'm still on my journey of healing my gut.
Wow.
Just to give perspective to everybody. Wow. For a whole year, I couldn't eat more than like 4 or 5 ingredients. It was like beef, salt, coconut oil and chicken. I was 20 pounds lighter than I am now.
Wow.
My hair was falling out. My nails were brittle. And you want to talk about my relationship with my husband. I started feeling like I wasn't sexy. I could barely hug him, let alone any intimacy. You've got to understand what that does to a woman's emotions, how I felt about myself.
Mm-hmm.
Tom was so supportive.
Wow.
But I felt like I wasn't bringing, you know, beauty to our relationship. That was me. That wasn't him. Sex was out the window.
Mm.
And it was like, I couldn't even stand up 5 minutes at a time. And on the outside, we had like just literally were celebrating Quest being a $1 billion company and one of the most fastest growing nutrition companies in the world. And here I am. I can't even.
When you want the best, you have to act quickly, or someone else will get it instead. Like when you're trying to buy tickets for the best seat at your favorite team's big game. Or when you're hiring for your business and you want to find the most talented people for your open roles before the competition scoops them up. With ZipRecruiter, you can find qualified candidates fast. And right now you can try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/greatness. ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify top talent for your roles. Immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. And I believe finding the right team member is one of the most important steps in setting up my company for success. We like to ensure our new hires will be a good fit before they're even on the team. So I am grateful that I have ZipRecruiter's help when we want to grow the team fast. Amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/greatness. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/greatness. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. I've learned the hard way that constantly holding on to your emotions and repeatedly choosing to not talk about your feelings will only make you feel worse and worse. And up until about 10 or 11 years ago, I was afraid to talk about my trauma that I experienced. And I know we all carry around different stressors, big and small. And when we keep them bottled up, it can start to affect us negatively. But therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest and to figure out how to work through whatever's weighing you down. And if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to fit your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/Lewis today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/LEWIS.
I pretended I didn't tell anybody for months.
Wow.
I didn't tell anyone. So sorry, I know that was a long story,
no.
But really going back to your point of, I remember the day that my success changed. And that was the most beautiful lesson that if I can look back, right, like we think it was Tony Robbins, but I use this all the time. How can I make the most horrific thing be the best thing that's ever happened to me?
Yeah.
In that moment, I was tested.
Giving it meaning, yeah.
Yeah. And in that moment, I was tested. And it was like, you can't, I mean, like I said, I'm still struggling 6 years later. But how can that moment be the best thing that's ever happened to me? Number one, I took ownership. I did it to my gut.
Mm.
I was the one that had a bad relationship with food. I was the one that was taking the antibiotics.
Mm-hmm.
And for so long, I was like, it's the doctor's fault. It's the expert's fault. It's that person's fault. Taking ownership over my health changed everything, not just for my health, but in the way that I see business, in the way that I see my relationship. Now, every time something goes wrong, the very first thing I ask myself is, how can I take ownership over this?
Mm-hmm.
How was this my own doing? So that changed my whole health. That changed my business. Every time now something goes wrong in the business, whether it's an employee that has royally screwed up, I literally, before I say anything, it's like, what's my ownership in this?
Yeah, yeah. I know that feeling.
And so that just changed everything.
Uh-huh.
And then it also changed my idea of success. It really did. And so when I got, thank God, like, I don't know how I would think about success if that hadn't happened to me. I don't know how I would think about money if that didn't happen to me.
How do you think about it now?
I don't give a shit. Like, I love it, of course. It allows me to create content, right? It allows me to impact people. It allows me to do all the things that I do every day. If ever I was coming into conflict with my relationship, I wouldn't think twice about
mm-hmm.
it. If ever it was coming into conflict of me feeling good about myself, I wouldn't think about it. Like, that's what I mean by it doesn't dictate who I am and how I show up every day. It is an amazing facilitator amazing. And I'm such an advocate for wealth creation. I think it's BS. People are like, oh, like, no, it can do beautiful things. It really can. So I'm not going to BS anyone. But money in and of itself is like a superpower. You can use it for good or you can use it for evil. It's your choice.
Right.
And so for me, it's like it's so beautiful because I'm able to create beautiful things out of it. But it doesn't have a reflection of how I feel about myself, who I am and how I show up every day. And I don't know if it would have. It may have done that if my gut didn't fall apart.
Interesting. What has been the biggest struggle then for you mentally and emotionally in the last couple of years?
The biggest struggle is trying to ascend to the mountaintop. And the reason I say that, bro, is...
To get to the mountaintop?
Yes. Trying to
climb.
What
is the mountaintop?
I think the mountaintop is different for everyone.
Is that a goal?
For me, the mountaintop is checking boxes.
Okay.
Right? Like, it's checking boxes.
Give me an example.
An example. Okay, great. Now I host my own show on sports. Speak for yourself. Check. Oh, okay, great. Now I've partnered with Oprah on a book. Oh, another book. Oh, a third book.
Yeah.
Check. Okay, but the book has to bestsell. Check. It's just like, it's just trying to ascend, trying to do, and not being dejected when you don't. And then, bro, I also think trying to figure out our place on this earth.
Yeah.
I think we're all trying to do that. When we remove the masks and the makeup, figuratively speaking, of our life, we're all trying to figure out what value am I providing to the people I'm interacting with?
Yeah.
What value am I providing to society? Where is my place in life?
Mm-hmm.
And I've been constantly, my biggest struggle the last couple of years is trying to really figure that out.
Mm.
And now that it appears I figured that out, trying to sustain the heat, and the hate that comes with that.
The heat and the hate, huh? I don't think people understand that once you have audience and attention, there will be heat and hate.
Mm-hmm.
No matter how pure your intentions are, no matter how kind you try to be, there'll be hate.
But you know what I've realized, man, and my co-host Marcellus Wiley says this, criticism is the cost of praise.
It is.
We don't realize that enough. Like recently, for those watching sports news, Naomi Osaka, number one tennis player in the world just a couple years ago, she tried to stop a tennis match because somebody said, you suck. Somebody yelled, you suck. And she went to the judge and was like, and went to the ump and was like, yo, can we stop the match? Like, can we get them kicked out?
Is this recently?
Recently.
I didn't see this.
2 days ago.
She tried to stop the match and say, kick that person out.
Correct. And at the end of the postgame press, her tears came into her eyes for different reasons. And I was just like, criticism is the cost of praise.
And if you don't want criticism, don't play the game.
It's like you don't have a choice.
Don't play. Don't show up.
You can't play if you don't want criticism.
Yeah.
It's not even like you were advising don't. It's like, yo, criticism comes with it.
Here's the funny thing, not to cut you off, is that you're going to be criticized at the top or criticized for doing nothing.
Mm-hmm.
So you might as well do something you enjoy.
Because
if you're sitting on the couch and you have all this potential, but you don't do something, the people closest to you are going to say, what are you doing?
Yeah.
This person has so much potential. Give me their potential.
Yeah.
I could do something great with this, but they're just sitting on their couch depressed.
Yeah.
Worried about people's thoughts or opinions.
Mm-hmm.
There's a price either way.
You got to pay it either way.
Maybe it's greater price as you're climbing and dealing with the more attention, but there's a price either way.
You know what else, man? And I've realized this too, and it's hit me in the face. You can't call for attention and hang up.
Yeah, someone look at me. Oh, but only say nice things about me.
You can't. And whether we intentionally call for attention or we don't, you can't call for attention and hang up. Like the boy who cried wolf, like us in our friend groups, like a child in a house cries and cries. Mm-hmm. Mother asks, what's wrong? Father asks, what's wrong? Nothing. And what are you crying for?
Right.
You can't call for attention and hang up. And so I think there's just a lot of learning and discovering that I'm doing on this journey.
Yeah. The emotional regulation is funny. I was just interviewing a neuroscientist / brain surgeon.
Mm-hmm.
He's an expert in both areas. So he studies the brain and the mind, right? The thoughts. And after this 2-hour conversation, the whole thing came down to the number one skill to have is the ability to emotionally regulate your feelings
mm-hmm.
and how thoughts
The brain and the mind are connected to feelings and the ability to emotionally regulate them. Not saying that you're not going to have wide range of emotions, but the ability to regulate under pressure, under stress, so that you can get into flow, that you can get back to your mission, your vision, and not be in chaos mode. You know, you can defend yourself rationally, essentially, in times of chaos. And he said, that's kind of what it comes down to. If I could teach a skill, it'd be the skill of emotional regulation. And I think the farther we try to strive to unlock our potential, the more we need to learn that, because the more people are going to be coming at us, it sounds like.
Yeah. Yeah. One, I think that's a phenomenal thought. I think it was Michael Jordan's trainer who said, emotions are dangerous, but controlled anger is like, or controlled aggression is like the most
dangerous of all. Is that Tim Grover?
Yes,
he's great.
It's like the most dangerous of all.
Yeah. Because being emotional and reacting, you're going to foul out. You're going to do something stupid.
Correct.
Which I did many times in multiple sports. And then you learn the lesson, oh, my emotional reaction gets me on the bench or hurts my team.
And you know what's interesting? We're talking sports, but this is a life conversation.
Man. Yeah, it's life.
Because while you can say foul out literally, figuratively speaking, if you're at the grocery store and then you get upset and then you get emotional and then you get into it with the cashier emotionally fouling out, if you're talking to a friend and then you get into it with your friend and then you say something you shouldn't have, emotionally fouling out, relationship oriented, if you're talking to somebody and you're dating and then you get into it. So we're talking a sports conversation, but it is the controlling of your mind. But to me, bro, everything starts with the mind.
Yeah.
Both our greatest limitations and our greatest accomplishments, to me, it's all up here.
Absolutely. What has been the biggest, you talked about living a life without failure or fear of failure.
Living a life without failure.
What is the biggest fear for you in the last couple of years then? And now that you've, let's call it broken through, right? You were already really successful. I mean, you're an NFL player and had a career in sports, TV and all these things, but broken through to a different level. What is now the greatest fear?
Ooh. That's why I like talking to you.
Amen.
That's why I like talking to you. My biggest fear is becoming complacent. My biggest fear is not realizing I'm living inside of a box that is around me. My biggest fear is not realizing, hey, there's a door you haven't yet opened, and what you think is a world is actually just a locker that you are inside of. One of my greatest, one of my favorite scenes of any movie, it's the end of Men in Black. I believe it's Men in Black 1. And at the end of the movie, they open up a locker. And they open up the locker and they realize there's an entire another world out there. They thought they were living in their world, but there's such a bigger world out there. And my greatest fear is not pushing beyond a boundary, because I don't even realize the boundary is set, because I didn't set it, because somebody else set it. And I've been living inside of somebody else's box or somebody else's boundary. The reason we don't achieve our highest highs, bro, isn't because we're not skilled. It isn't because we're not talented. It isn't even necessarily because we don't want it. It's because we don't realize how high we could achieve.
Right.
I think that's the biggest limiting reactant to realizing our highs. One of my favorite stories, if not my favorite story, story of Roger Bannister.
Four Minute Mile.
For those that aren't familiar, Roger Bannister. Scientists believed it was physically impossible to run a mile in under 4 minutes. Quick history lesson for everybody. That's my favorite story. Scientists believe it's physically impossible to run a mile in under 4 minutes. May 5th, 1952, it had never been done in 2,000 years. But by May 6th, Roger Bannister, Oxford, England, runs a mile, 3 minutes, 59 seconds. Within 2 years, 10 people ran a mile in under 4 minutes. Now, the world record for the mile, 3 minutes, 43 seconds, and roughly 1,800 people have done so. Why? Because one man, Roger Bannister, removed the barriers that other people set around him. One man said, you know what? I'm not going to subscribe to that barrier. One man said, I'm not going to subscribe to goals. One man said, I'm not going to subscribe to that. And he broke the dam open for everybody. And after that dam was broken for everybody, the whole rest of the running world proceeded to run through it. So my biggest fear, bro, is living inside of a box that somebody else set before me.
So if you don't have goals to break or reach, what are you reaching for?
Mm.
Like, what's beyond a barrier that you're not trying to accomplish?
For me, I'm reaching for movement.
Okay.
That's all it is. I'm reaching for progress. Yeah. I'm moving forward.
Uh-huh.
I'm moving forward.
So it's not reaching an end goal.
No, it's moving.
Yes.
It's moving forward, man. Like, you're going to do another episode tomorrow, and hopefully it's better than today, and then the next tomorrow, and hopefully it's better than that day, and then you're just going to keep moving.
Uh-huh.
Like, let's not get so bogged down by, but I didn't get this. Oh, but I got that. Just keep moving forward. When you go to a beach and you end up standing in the ocean, eventually after about 5 minutes, you'll look back and be like, yo, I done drifted way far away. And you just drifted further than you ever thought. That's where I'm at now. Mm-hmm. Let's keep moving forward.
Yeah.
We get so caught up in, I want to be married by 26,
yes,
and I want to have 2 kids, and I want to have bought my first home by 29, and by 35, I want to be done having kids, and I want to have 4 kids, 2 boys, 2 girls, preferably twins, because that would be easiest.
Yes.
Bump all that.
Yeah.
Forget all that goal setting. Goals lead to failure.
Mm.
I want to live the most impactful and significant life I can possibly live. And if I happen to live that life with somebody else, great. Mm. And if I don't, great. And at 35, I want to see where I am. And at 30, I want to see where I am.
Yeah.
And I want to just continue to move forward and make progress as a human being.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of the day, bro, the reason we have these goals isn't even because of us. It's because of other people.
Mm.
This blew my mind. This blew my mind. And you're a sports guy, so this may as well, this might blow yours as well. This truly blew my mind. We often debate LeBron James, Michael Jordan, greatest basketball player of all time. Who do you say, sir?
I mean, I'm from Ohio, so I go for LeBron.
Go for LeBron.
I just saw LeBron last night, too, play. So, I mean, he's still playing at what? He's
at the highest level. Yeah. Dude's 37 years old, ball.
He just had 10,000 rebounds, 10,000 points, and 10,000 assists.
Beast. Let me blow this Michael Jordan, LeBron James debate open for a second.
Yes.
For those that claim Jordan's the greatest basketball player ever, they claim it primarily for this reason. He went to 6 NBA championships.
And he won 6.
And he won 6. But outside of those 6 NBA championships, Jordan never went back to an NBA finals. He went 6 times, and he won all 6 times. LeBron, on the other hand, has gone 10 times, and he's only won 4.
It's more like he's more like Tom Brady. You know?
Gone 10, won 4, Jordan went 6, won 6 times. Okay, great. Now let's talk about the same exact sport, basketball. Let's talk about the same exact result, first place and or second place, Jordan and LeBron. But now let's talk about a different measuring system, a different metric system, the Olympic Games.
Mm-hmm.
In the Olympic Games, Michael Jordan would have 6 golds, no silvers. LeBron would have 4 golds and 6 silvers. On an Olympic scale, 4 golds and 6 silvers is abundantly and clearly greater than 6 golds. But in the NBA scale, 6 golds is better.
Right.
So the question simply comes down to, whose metric system are you using?
Right.
And the problem is, we let other people's metric systems dictate the happiness in our life. Because in the NBA, you finish in second, you leave the court crying and weeping, devastated. The Olympic Games, you finish in second, to a degree you're elated, depending on what country.
Right.
Why? Because somebody else dictated how we should feel about a certain situation based upon their metric system, not even our own.
Absolutely.
And I'm just done subscribing to other people's metric systems.
I go to the Olympics, that's an accomplishment. I go to the Olympics and get a bronze, I'm like, I medaled, you know?
I'm one of the 3 best in the world.
Yeah, exactly.
At what I do.
Exactly.
But in the NBA, you get third. In the NFL, you finish in third. In the MLB, you finish in third or fourth. You're like, you're petrified.
Yeah,
you're distraught.
Exactly.
And I realized, bro, we just subscribe to other people's metric systems.
Yeah.
And we let it dictate our happiness.
Now tell me, okay, I love this approach. I love the philosophy and the mindset. But for someone watching or listening who's like, okay, but I really want to accomplish some goals to feel like I'm accomplishing something because I wanted to build my, because it's always built my confidence when I do accomplish. But I hear you say, but if you don't accomplish this, they got to hurt your self-esteem. So how do we, if someone's like, I want to write a book this year.
Right.
Do I set a goal to write a book, or is it a journey of writing the book?
Great.
Do I create micro goals on a weekly basis and have accountability? You know, there's going to be deadlines, or you know, how do we think about the process of like completing a project, launching something we want to launch, doing our artwork, creating our music, whatever it might be?
Mm-hmm.
How do we then set these things and make them happen?
Right.
So I got my master's in sports psychology, and I dedicated my final thesis paper, if you will, for my master's degree to this concept. I elaborate and expound on this concept in a logical, but I will give you a snippet. Because I studied goals so long, I understand there is a use for goals. Mm-hmm. When you are talking about the micro in order to accomplish something, there is a use for goals mm-hmm. in a relay race, to stick in Olympic sport of yes. track and field. It does not matter how fast we run if we do not get the baton around.
Right.
So the micro goal needs to be to get the baton around. Mm-hmm. When I say don't set goals, have an objective with no limitations, I'm talking about a larger principle of life.
Yes.
When you're talking about macro things such as, hey, I just want to write a book, right? In the macro of writing a book, sure. So I want to finish a chapter on Monday, and I want to write a chapter every week, every Monday. Mm-hmm. If you have a employer who's like, hey, we need this done by this date. Well, within that stance, there is a means to set a goal. You talked mm-hmm. about talking to the neuroscientist. You mentioned this pivotal word, flow. In order to achieve flow, flow is simply when you no longer are conscious of time in the midst of mm-hmm. a task. Mm-hmm. In order to achieve flow, you need automatic feedback, autonomous feedback. In order to get that feedback, you need to set goals.
Yes.
So there are principles, objectives in life within micro constructs where goals have value. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about the macro look of life, where goals will do more damage than they will success.
That's what you're saying, yeah.
Or at least goals will just be a limiting reactive.
Gotcha.
Because I always think, what if Roger Bannister wasn't just trying to break the 4-minute mile? How much faster could he have gone? Mm. You never know. He went 359.8. He broke it barely. Yeah. Literally 0.2 of a second was the difference. Uh-huh. How much faster could he have gone? Maybe no faster,
right. But
maybe. If my goal, Lewis, was to write a book, I would have wrote a book. I wouldn't have wrote the second one. Mm. And I might not have written the third one. So that's where I'm thinking, like, bigger picture. I just want to see people be the best version of themselves.
So how do we, people are going to fail, but you're saying to reframe failure or to not even look at failure as an option, because if you don't set the goal, you can't fail in that sense.
Bingo. I thought about this the other time. I don't think people fail. What I say is this, and I thought about this. I didn't fail, I fell. And as long as I get up, I win.
Ooh, yeah. Like a child. A child falls hundreds and thousands of times, and they never think to themselves, maybe this walking thing isn't for me.
Dude.
They fall and they get up.
We didn't fail. We fell. Uh-huh. As long as you get up, you win. The winning isn't getting up. Uh-huh. So many people think they failed. They didn't fail.
They stopped.
You stopped.
Yeah.
You didn't fail. You just fell.
And you just never got up.
That's it. A relationship didn't work. You didn't fail at that relationship. And then you didn't fail in that relationship. Job, you got fired. You didn't fail. You fell. Get up. You'll look back. You win as long as you get up.
Right.
So when people keep talking about failure, I don't subscribe to that, but I don't subscribe to goals, because ultimately to fail is to put a period where a comma belongs.
Mm-hmm.
I ain't doing that no more, big dog.
Or dot, dot, dot.
Exactly.
To be continued.
Yeah. I ain't putting periods where commas belong anymore.
Yeah.
And then we do that too often in our life. It's like, this relationship ended, period. No, this relationship ended. I found somebody who was more suitable for me, who I am more suitable for, mm-hmm. and I now ended up significantly happier than I was.
That's a good way to look at it. You know, I feel like it took me a long time to learn how to walk in relationships. I was just falling and wobbling all over the place. You know, I just needed some coordination sooner,
mm-hmm.
but it took me a while to be able to look back and learn the lesson.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like I'm in a much more stable place. You know,
yeah.
I have coordination with my body now in relationships in terms of walking. And some people learn faster in certain areas of life,
mm-hmm.
but it's not about giving up on love, giving up on your career, or your books, or your message, or your art.
Yeah,
it's about learning. A friend of mine posted this video. His name is Devin Rodriguez. He got big on TikTok. I think he's got like 30 million followers in the last 2 years. He started drawing people on subways in New York City, and he would just see them. He would draw them and he'd hand them a sketch, and people would be blown away. He did a video recently where he started learning in 2010 how to draw. And he posted a photo from 2010 to 2020, every year, his work. And it was ugly the mm-hmm. first 5 years. I mean, you'd throw it away. It was so bad, right? It was like a 5-year-old sketch. It was like mm-hmm. something I would do right now. It's about how I draw. But now it looks like you take a photo of someone and he can draw it perfectly. But it took him 10 years to master the skill. He didn't fail the first 5 years, 7 years. He fell forward by kept improving. Mm-hmm. I think it's a beautiful lesson you're talking about. Don't think of it as failure. Think of it as falling.
Bro, and so many people in our life, even our loved ones, want to tell us that we failed. And we begin to believe them.
Yeah.
And that's the problem. We've all committed to believing the lie that we have failed in life. We failed in our school. We failed in our relationships. Yes. We failed in our jobs. Mm-hmm. We haven't actually failed. But if you believe and listen to a lie long enough, you will be convinced that it's the truth.
Yeah.
And what I now practice is detangling so many of the lies that we've been told over time, deconstructing so many of the thoughts that we've believed over time, because it's those thoughts and it's those lies that bog us down.
Yeah.
And bro, this also blew my mind. The Mona Lisa. I went to Paris last summer. I went to the Louvre. And bro, you been to the Louvre?
I think I went to the outside. I didn't go inside. Yes. But yeah.
So I'm in the Louvre and there's art everywhere. Yeah. There's art on the ceiling. There's freaking art on the walls, art on the left side. There's art everywhere. As I'm walking through this, you know, hundreds of acres seemingly, I see a huge long line.
For the Mona Lisa.
I don't know yet. I don't know. So I'm like, what in the heck is this line for? There's art everywhere, y'all. Why y'all standing in the line to see a piece of art? Just look left. I turn the corner, huge line for the Mona Lisa. I was like, I ain't waiting in the line, so I'm gonna just walk by and see. I look at it. It's nice.
It's a painting.
It's a painting. Yeah. Painted somewhere from 1503 to 1518, I believe, historians suggest. You realize if the Mona Lisa were painted today, might go to garage sale for $20.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe. But why? Because the Mona Lisa back then depicted a pale woman with thin lips and a large forehead. And that was the depiction of beauty back then. Mm. Depiction of beauty in 2022, sun-kissed skin, you know, thin waist. Nice build. But why, bro, do we subscribe to a definition of beauty that somebody else set? Because you can never catch it. The definition of beauty in the 1500s, vastly different than the definition of beauty now. Uh-huh. What was beautiful then, we don't value now. What we value now, we don't value then. But either way, we didn't even set it. Back to, why do we let such insignificant people have significance in our lives? And man, I'm just like, what all are we believing?
Yes.
That we just don't need to.
I hope you enjoyed today's episode and it inspired you on your journey towards greatness. Make sure to check out the show notes in the description for a full rundown of today's episode with all the important links. And if you want weekly exclusive bonus episodes with me personally, as well as ad-free listening, then make sure to subscribe to our Greatness Plus channel exclusively on Apple Podcasts. Share this with a friend on social media and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts as well. Let me know what you enjoyed about this episode in that review. I really love hearing feedback from you and it helps us figure out how we can support and serve you moving forward. And I want to remind you, if no one has told you lately, that you are loved, you are worthy, and you matter. And now it's time to go out there and do something great.